Welcome to episode 295 of the Energy Talks podcast. I'm energy and climate journalist Markham Hislop. The Alberta government recently froze the development of new wind and solar projects, in part because rural communities are concerned about taking quote-unquote prime farming land out of production. What if there was a way to combine solar farms and farming? Agrivoltaics is still relatively new, but the National Renewable Energy Laboratory in the U.S. estimates there is already over 2.8 gigawatts of agrivoltaic sites in the United States, most of which involve sheep grazing or pollinator habitat. Today's guest, Paul Worley of Ascent Solar Technologies, thinks that thin film solar could be a big part of the agrivoltaic approach in the future. Welcome to the interview, Paul.
Thank you for having me, Markham. I look forward to talking about agrivoltaics.
Well, me too, because I have to tell you, the seven-month pause in wind and solar development in Alberta was highly controversial, as you can imagine. And the irony here, for folks who aren't familiar with what happened, is that the Premier of Alberta, Danielle Smith, claimed when she paused it back in August that she had done it at the behest of the Alberta Utilities Commission, amongst others. That's the regulator. And the regulator, their report was released in February, and they said, no, there was no need to do a pause. We could have figured out all this stuff with the existing processes and so on. So it was the pause was widely seen as just being very anti-renewables, and a lot of rural people were concerned about, you know, in their words, taking prime farmland out of production. And agrivoltaics seems to be the answer to that concern. But let's talk first of all about thin film solar. What the heck is that?
Okay. It's basically, so our product is compared to a panel. Our product is about 1/80th the weight. Okay. So, which is very important with agrivoltaics, and I would define agrivoltaics in two categories. There's agrivoltaics with a panel, okay? So normally a panel would be a couple feet above the ground, you know, slanted at whatever angle best suits the sun, okay? And agrivoltaics with a panel, what you do is you just spread the panels out. But you still lose somewhere between 40 and 70% of your farm production, okay? Just because the sun doesn't get to the crops underneath the panels, and nor does water get it to the underneath the panels. So what our product does, it's approximately 12 to 13 inches wide, and we hang it anywhere from 15 to 22 feet above the ground. And it's slanted, so the water runs off of it, and it's spread. It can, you know, you spread it out anywhere from, you know, 1.5 to call it 3 feet. And what happens is you get the sun. The sun still hits the plants. You can hang it that high. You can't hang a very heavy solar panel that high because any type of wind creates a sail and then pulls it off of the mount. So, and then water runs off our panel and into the ground. It also acts as a cooling, and so they don't need as much water. So the water's kind of trapped. So your water usage falls 15 to 20%. The crop production, you'll lose somewhere between 3 and 12%, depending how far you want to spread I'm not going to use our panels, but spread our sheets. And the beauty about it is ours too, it's high enough to run all the farm equipment. That's key. Now, it's really more designed for, I would call it, specialty crops and in areas where there's high power rates and or high water costs. because what you're doing is you're offsetting the water usage that that lowers the cost there, and you're offsetting the higher power rates. So that's kind of it. We can go into a little bit more detail later on.
Right. Now you had a swath of your thin film just a moment ago on camera. Of course, our listeners can't see that, but it looked to me almost like a big strip of film, old-timey camera film.
It's film, and it's about a little tiny bit thicker than copy paper.
And what is the average efficiency, I understand, of a solar panel now is in the 22-23% range. What's the efficiency of your product?
We like to look at it. We're getting to the efficiency of like 16 to 16 and a half. There's a fundamental difference though, because our panel will absorb more light in the non-peak hours. Okay, because we any kind of light coming in will produce power. So it's really, you got to look at it as how much watts do you produce? Because, you know, when direct sun, in the direct sun, call it 3 to 3.5 hours, the solar panel is producing that. And let's just call that from 11 to 3. But from 10 to 11, it may only be producing 15 watts. And then the hour before that, it's only producing 11. Whereas ours will be producing closer to, you know, call it 15 versus 16 and a half.
So the panel and the film just work differently.
They
have
work
different
totally
characteristics
different.
And that makes the economics different.
Correct. Right. And ours is going to be clearly going to be more expensive than panels. Okay. And it's not going to put off quite as much power over a day period. But you still have all the you still have 90%+ of the revenue coming off the crops, which under a normal panel you'd probably have anywhere from 40 to 50% of the revenue coming off the panels.
So the does crop. the combination of the lower generation of electricity, but still being able to maintain a crop on the land, does that change the economics in favor of thin film?
It should, yes. The other thing that, and this is the other issue you're dealing with is my product's more suitable for smaller farms, okay? But on a large farm out in the middle of nowhere, you can't. The infrastructure doesn't support a large solar farm in a lot of cases. Sure, if you're near, you're closer to a city and all that, and have a connection point, you can do that. But a lot of times out in the middle of nowhere, your solar farm will produce more power than can be used. So ours are designed for small farms, and it'll take care of the house and some of the peripheral stuff in the barn and if you had a charging and the new electric farm equipment and that. That type of thing, where you have to charge batteries that you then charge the equipment overnight.
So what is there I know there's a levelized cost of energy estimate for thin film because I see it on Lazard's table all the time. I haven't checked it for a while, so I don't have the numbers at my fingertips, but if you know, do you know what the comparison of the levelized cost of energy between a panel and thin film?
I don't.
Not a
it's
problem.
Because we really don't compete in that. Yeah.
So it's a different market, really.
It's really a different market. Like I'll make this statement, Mark. In the next 5 to 10 years, you're probably not going to see my product sitting over a 50, a 1,000-acre corn farm or a 1,000-acre cotton farm or a 1,000-acre soybean farm. That just is that could be 8 to 10 years out, but it's not going to be in the next 5 to 6 years.
Okay, well, fair enough. I mean, one of the things that's become clear, I think, over the last year or two, is that even within the clean energy space, so we're talking, you know, solar and wind and maybe some now geothermal is making a bit of a push. We'll see more of that, on and on and on. It's the diversity of the technologies. You know, you see it on the storage side. We started out, all we had was lithium ion with, you know, NMC, and now we're getting sodium, we're getting lithium iron phosphate, we're getting sodium iron ion and zinc ion and iron ion and redox batteries and all of that. And they all have their niche. They all have a specific application that they do better than the competition. And it sounds like in the solar generation technology space, there's beginning to be that kind of innovation and differentiation. Is that a fair way to look at it?
Yes. Yes. We applied for a grant. We went through the process of applying. Then we got accepted to make a bid. And we're waiting on the DOE. That'll be very, that's going to change things. We're doing it on a small vineyard in California.
Yeah, I want to talk about the DOE in just a moment because, you know, we pay a lot of attention to Jiggershaw. We've had some of his folks on the various podcast episodes. And what the DOE is doing is from a Canadian point of view, where we don't have an equivalent. Like, there is no Jiggershaw running around Canada evangelizing for clean energy technologies. And certainly not one that has a big pot of money like Jigger does. You know, like he can make a difference, but with a signature in his office, he can make a big difference in some of these spaces. But before we get there, I want to talk about the technology, because one of the things that's become clear is that China has scaled up its solar panel module production so great. And these figures come from Wood Mackenzie, but, you know, they're now making panels at like 11 cents a watt. And the Europeans apparently make them for 22 cents a watt. And the United States manufacturers, it's 40 cents a watt. Well, the chances are China's won that race. But the one thing that the U.S. does and will do in the foreseeable future is innovate. An innovation machine. And so here's the question.
Okay.
Our products like
your comment on the U.S. panels, but go ahead.
Yeah. Are products like yours, our technologies like yours, part of an innovation response to China's scaled up low cost response?
Yeah, I hope so, because we are also on another DOE project. And until that's announced, I got to be very careful on confidentiality reasons. But that could change. That could change a lot of things in the U.S. But U.S. panels, though, they're really going after the thin. It's called thin solar. It's about, you know, 20%. I'm sorry, 70 or 80% lighter than the Chinese stuff. It's also produced, they use 90% less power than the Chinese do. So it also produces more power for a longer period of time. So I don't want to quote anymore. I used to know a lot about that. And I can't say that I'm an expert on it now. But that 40 cents a watt seems to be a little high with the new panels the U.S. is producing.
But anyway, sure, fair enough. And I think WoodMac was looking at the industry as a whole, and you know that would be an average. And so there's probably plenty of firms that are under that average. But it sounds like, you know, my hypothesis as it is kind of correct, that the Americans, you guys are doing things better, smarter, you know, pushing the envelope in some areas that the Chinese are not. They're basically a blunt instrument, right? I mean, they just have these huge factories. And that's great, because there are places in emerging economies like Africa and Latin America, where that's a terrific application.
Asia, yeah.
Yeah, just build them out as, you know, you got plenty of land. and just build out those big solar farms and away you go. But you get into a more sophisticated, I don't know if that's the right word, but we'll use it anyway, sophisticated economy like the United States, maybe Canada, the EU, you can see where some of these more niche products like yours can get a foothold in the market.
Yes, I hope so. I would agree with that statement, yes.
Okay, well, what one of the things that caught my attention was your company thinks that the thin film actually stands up to harsh weather better than a panel. Could you explain that?
Correct. Two different things. If you were to go to our website, you can look. We did some the three or four different services of DOD bought our product. Marines, Special Forces, SEALs, and I think Navy used our product. And you know, they didn't believe that if it had a hole in it, it would still work. So they would shoot our film with a gun. Okay, and they punch a hole in it. And so what happens is, and I know the viewers can't see this, there would be the hole, but the power goes around the hole. And so if the hole only damaged 3% of the panel, then that's the only power you lose would be the 3%. Whereas if it's a silicon-based panel, you typically would lose a lot more of the entire panel. The other thing is hail. So like, you know, every other week you read about a hailstorm taking out, you know, 50 megawatts of solar. Okay, so that's that. And two, one of the other characteristics of ours is, I think I touched on it briefly, if you were to hang a panel 22 feet above the crops, okay, you would still have to spread it out. You would still lose a lot more crop production, but you could probably get it down, I'm guessing, 20 to 30% reduction. But then any type of wind, when I say any type of wind, probably anything above 25 or 30 miles an hour, we could just rip it out because it's heavy. You'd have to have a lot more supports to keep it in. So it would be, you know, three or four times as costly to install. And so ours, because it's spread out, it's very lightweight, it would be mounted on a thin piece of any type of steel, zinc, whatever you want to put it on. And it, the wind just kind of goes through it, so it's not affected as much by wind.
So when you're talking to customers, how much does more extreme weather and the increase in that extreme weather as climate change intensifies, how much does that play into the discussion?
The half a dozen people we've had conversations with are typically located along a coast, okay, where, you know, they would have to pay to help us design a product that would withstand a Cat 4 or 5 hurricane or tropical storm or whatever you want to call it. But the issue there is in some coastal areas, especially in the Far East, you know, they'll have a decent sized hurricane hit them every, you know, 2 or 3 years. And what happens if they have solar, they got to redo the whole solar. So if you're redoing the entire solar project again, then, you know, ours would be very, very cost effective. The other areas are, we were talking to a group down in Argentina or in Peru, and the weather there, there's constant winds. And so they're doing an experiment with some Chinese panels, and then we're hoping they can come back to us and try us. But you know, they have an entire engineering staff and everything else, so we you know, if they were to come back, we could come up with a solution. But they have 20 to 30 mile an hour winds basically, you know, maybe not every day, but many days, and then they have gusts that go up to 60 to 80 miles. And so his concern, and they have a bit of hail. So his concern, but he already had the other panels come, and his concern is the weather would either pull the panels off or the hail would destroy the panels themselves. So that's that. The Chinese have a product, I would say, that's similar to mine. It's flexible, but it's still a crystalline structure, so they still have some of the issues with weather. And if you ask for an order, they'll tell you we'll send it when we get up to mass production. So that's what we're seeing out of China on this. But
Well,
in general,
let's talk about that. Is your factory in the United States, and where are you at in the scale-up process?
we have produced and can produce, 4.5 to 6 megawatts a year. It's not a ton, but it's that we're there. And yes, I have a full facility right outside of Denver in Thornton, Colorado.
Okay, so what are your plans over the next 2 to 5 years? Are you hoping to add additional factories, expand the one you've got? What?
I would say most likely, if we land some big customers, I would put the factory closer to them. Okay. So that would be one. We would plan on expanding in general, but we've got to, and that we'll get back to, I'll get back to this in a second when I took, but our plans would expand, as orders come in. That's the best way to phrase it. I came into the company in December of 2022 as the CFO, and then I was made the CEO in late April of 2023. And when I came to the CEO, I basically said this company had it was started in 2005, six. And they'd only hit 10.5, 10.6 efficiency. Okay, never broke that. So I sat the team down and said, "Hey, we in order to be competitive in agrivoltaics and space has is growing rapidly. So, but we have to be in that, 16 to 17% efficiency, because in space we actually." We don't have much degradation in space. So that's an advantage because they look at end of life power. So if you start off in 20 and drop to 12, that's great. But if you start off at 16 and drop to 15.5, you're better off at the end of the life. So anyway, so the team responded. We got to 17.7 efficiency. And now we're producing, that's by cell. Now we've got, producing modules, we're up into the mid 14s now. And we've
What kind of materials are used in your thin film? And because of course, everybody these days, when you talk about the energy transition, clean energy technology, you're talking about critical minerals and shortages and and problem. And then there are ethical and labor problems within some of the countries that are supplying those minerals. So what kind of materials have you got in your product?
Gallium, arsenide, copper, silver. Oh, there's like four or five others, but the only one I would say we use such a little amount. But if you read around, gallium can be an issue, but we use such a small amount of that, it hasn't never been. It's not an issue for us.
Gotcha. So let's talk about the Department of Energy. I, you know, looking at it from afar, what have we seen over the last, since the Infrastructure Act in 2021? You got that, you got the CHIPS Act, you got the Defense Act, you've got the Inflation Reduction Act. I mean, there's just so much money being pumped into this, sort of the clean energy sector. And the Department of Energy is at the head of all of that. And people like Jigar Shah are having a huge role in how the U.S. responds to the competitive threat from China and from, and also to some extent from the EU. So where do you fit in? How are you working with the DOE?
We've applied for several grants with the DOE, and I would say that would be the extent. If, you know, if somebody did decide to buy or wanted to buy our product and do it, we would qualify for some of the tax grants and or tax savings associated with solar. But that's kind of the extent. You know, DOD just came up with a new program for grants and loan packages too. So they were just allocated some of the same money. So
that's the Department of Defense.
Yes, Department of Defense. Yeah, I know Canada has one of those.
I can guarantee you it's a very small percentage of the American version.
Yeah, I know.
And of course, the American military is famous or infamous, however you want to look at it, for supporting early stage science and technologies that show promise for their purposes. So it makes perfect sense that they would be interested in, sources of electricity, in remote locations where they might be operating.
Yep. Yep. And I was in the Army for over 10 years. So, yeah.
So, what are the applications in an urban environment, Paul, or are there any?
Eventually, we would get to rooftops would be a primary area. That would be first. Second, technically, you saw my material. I could wrap a building. But that requires a lot of engineering, because my part is simple. It'll wrap, it'll go around corners, it'll do all that, but it's connecting it into the infrastructure of the building, so it's producing power that's then connected into the infrastructure of the building. That's the engineering.
Can I slap it on my roof easily, or is it more difficult than standard?
No, you could. Like you said, I mean, what I showed you was probably a fifth of a normal panel, and it weighs 1/80th or 1/100th of that. So yes, you could install it, and you can walk on it, which is unique, because that won't damage it.
Oh, interesting. We put it on a road or put it on a sidewalk, something like
that. I won't go that far, but. I think the Israelis came up with one that you can install, but it doesn't produce a whole lot of power from what I read. But
sure. Well, look, Paul, thank you very much for this. Really appreciate it. You've given us an insight into a niche in the solar industry that I see, as I mentioned, I see it in Lazard, but didn't really know what it was. And now I have a little better idea. Thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed the interview. I appreciate it, Mark.